Hey there, it's Debbie. Today's episode is a special re-release of a favorite conversation from the archives. Unless you're a longtime listener of the show, there's a good chance you haven't heard this one before. And even if you have, you just might get something completely different from it this time around.
I don't believe in kid food. Kids are human beings. Yes, we need to feed them appropriately, weaning and that kind of stuff. But before all these processed foods and packaging and special shapes were invented, they were just eating a mashed up or smaller pieces of what the family ate. So this whole idea that there is kid food or a special diet that appeals to them is really made up and pushed forth as a commercial agenda. And it has nothing to do with child nutrition or what children really can eat.
Welcome to Tilled Parenting, a podcast featuring interviews and conversations aimed at inspiring, informing, and supporting parents raising differently wired kids. I'm your host, Debbie Reber, and today I'm talking with Jennifer Scribner, a nutritional therapy practitioner and author of the new book, From Mac and Cheese to Veggies, Please, How to Get Your Kids to Eat New Foods, End Picky Eating Forever, and Stay Sane in the Process, which is based on her work with hundreds of clients and details how any parent can dramatically change the diet of their pickiest kids. I know that many of us raising differently wired kids have challenges surrounding food, whether it's sensitivities to textures, intolerances, or simply our desire to get them to expand their food choices to include more greens and healthier options. In this conversation, Jennifer and I talked about how to achieve these goals all while eliminating battles around the dinner table. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about this. We have not done too many episodes on nutrition. And when I heard about your book about picky eaters, I think even just that phrase, picky eaters, is something that me and many of our listeners are like, oh my gosh, I need to know more about this because it, especially with differently wired kids, the issue of picky eaters is, it's something a lot of us are dealing with. So I think you're going to have a lot of insight to share for us today.
Yeah, it's a really common struggle.
Yes, absolutely. So before we get into talking about your book, can you just first introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are. And I always like to ask people's personal why. So why you do the work that you do?
Sure. Yeah. So I am by education a nutritional therapy practitioner. And I got into this field for my own reasons of wanting to have clear skin. But what brought me into kind of the current why was working with nutrition, and I'm also a GAPS diet practitioner, gut and psychology syndrome. I primarily ended up working with kids on the autism spectrum with sensory processing disorder or with serious gut issues, eczema, life-threatening allergies. And one of the places I was finding a lot of success was helping people with picky eating one-on-one. But then in the wider world, I saw so many families not making any food changes because they were so afraid that their kids wouldn't eat and they couldn't overcome any of this picky eating. So they're just kind of sitting on the fence there, feeling like they want to make changes, but not doing it. And that is what prompted me to write the book. And that's a message I just don't think is being talked about enough, that how doable this is. So I feel really passionate about whatever food changes you want to make. We all want our kids to be healthier and to have more nutrients in their diet. Here's the steps you can take to do that, whatever plan you're choosing.
That's fantastic. You know, just hearing you talk about that, I talked about this when I had a nutritionist on probably a year and a half ago on the podcast to talk about specifically the relationship between diet and ADHD. And one of the things that I said to her was, I always felt as if, you know, I have so many other things that I'm focusing on. I don't have the energy to focus on this. Like, I'm already dealing with this and school problem, you know, just all these other issues. I'm like, if I dive into dietary changes, I may lose my mind. So I think that sitting on the fence and it just feeling just too daunting and overwhelming you probably hear that all the time. And I think it's really great that you're breaking it down for people.
And that's the thing that that's how it feels from the beginning. But once you make these changes and the food time isn't a battle, or you can make one meal that your whole family eats instead of pulling out, you know, special things or special preparation for your picky kid, you actually have more time on your hands and you have more energy. And if these changes help your kid sleep better, focus better, lessen, you know, tantrums, that kind of thing, that adds a lot back into your life as far as time and energy. So for me, diet is foundational. Of course, I'm biased. I'm a nutritional therapist, but that's how I've seen the changes play out within my clients and the people I've worked with.
Yeah, well, those all sound like very good outcomes, things we would all want. So, you know, before we get into some of the practical tips in your book, how would you even define, you know, what would be considered typical picky eating versus picky eating that is problematic?
Yeah, so there is a phase where picky eating is common and typical, and that's usually around 2 to 3 years old. You know, it can be considered part of the terrible twos that we talk about. And that is where kids may like one thing one day, hate it the next day, really hyper focus on one food, refuse to try other things. And it is a phase if we're allowing our kids to eat whole foods and we keep offering the variety of real things. Where that tends to get off track is when our kids eat refined foods or more sugary things, and that becomes their preference, and they become addicted to this sugar cycle. And that's where it tends to, you know, go on longer, and it's considered chronic if it lasts more than a couple of years. So when this is going on at 4 years, at 10 years, at 12 years, that's about 40% of kids that go through that picky eating phase, but then turn into chronic picky eaters. And I myself, even with a neurotypical brain, was a fairly picky eater until I was in my 30s. Wow. It took me a long time because I grew up on processed food. So my go-tos were the macaroni and cheese and the top ramen and the popcorn and the chips. And they're things I still enjoy sometimes. But now I also eat a wide variety of vegetables and, you know, other whole foods, and those things are sprinkled in. So when it drags on a long time and when it is really hyper-focused, which is so common with autism, you know, the five foods, that's where it's really problematic.
So 40% of kids end up being chronic picky eaters. That's astounding to me.
In one longitudinal study that was done in the Journal of Eating Behavior, that's what they found with, they looked at kids from like two to 12 years old. That was something that really shocked me. But when you think about it, we kind of play it off as adults. I mean, I know a lot of 30-year-olds that just still want to drive through McDonald's every day, and we think it's a convenience, but some of it is that we haven't expanded our palate, and we are really married to certain foods rather than having a wide variety.
Well, I also think for a lot of us, we do what I call accidental parenting, you know, and by the time you've been doing something and then all of a sudden it's now your new reality and we're like, wait a minute, I did not mean for that habit to form. How did that happen? And that probably is very common. You see that a lot with parents, I imagine.
Yeah. And that was something that I learned when I was younger. I was a school bus driver. And so having 60 kids that I was responsible for in one place driving on the road, like that really taught me a lot about the behaviors that you could put up with and, you know, turn a blind eye to when you have one or two kids versus having a classroom full or a school bus full was different. Like you see the compounded results much more clearly. So I felt like that was a really good experience for me to see why some of this structure is so important.
So I'm curious, so you are in Portland, Oregon, and as I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking about Pamela Druckerman's book, Bringing Up Baby, and how the French are raising kids. And, you know, there's a big focus in that book that the French kids eat anything because they're offered cassoulet or they're offered, you know, what the adults are eating. I'm just curious your perspective on this. You know, we have listeners from all over the world. Would you say this is more of an American issue? Is it a global issue? What do you say about that?
I would say it tends to be more of a Western country issue. I definitely have, you know, clients like this in the UK and, you know, other areas in Europe. And it's something that's growing more in developing countries and in Asian countries because they're a little later to the game on having a lot of processed food, you know, so they have a better opportunity to keep their food traditions and to keep food more natural. And one thing that's really important that's changed is that we have marketing around food in the United States that tells us what kid food is, that there is a special food that kids like to eat. And I don't believe in kid food. Kids are human beings. Yes, we need to feed them appropriately, weaning and that kind of stuff. But before all these processed foods and packaging and special shapes were invented, they were just eating a mashed up or smaller pieces of what the family ate. So this whole idea that there is kid food or a special diet that appeals to them is really made up and pushed forth as a commercial agenda, and it has nothing to do with child nutrition or what children really can eat.
Yeah, so interesting. It's not a big thing over here. You know, I've lived in Amsterdam for 5 years now, and there aren't as many options in general in the supermarket of things to eat, and there really isn't a lot of marketing to kids. It's really, I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned that, and I remembered all the shapes of different foods and chicken nuggets and all the things that were available when Asher was younger. It's interesting.
Yeah. And the placement that we have in the stores for those things to be so easy to, you know, grab for kids here in the US. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of psychology that goes behind selling you the idea of kid foods and their processed foods.
Interesting. So can you say a little bit more about, you know, this physiology behind pickiness? So you mentioned this introduction to these more refined foods. Like, is that really what is happening, that are we dulling our kids' senses, or, you know, what's going on behind the scenes that's creating this culture of pickiness?
Yeah, there can be a number of different factors that come into play. And especially within the autism spectrum, there's a combination. It's rarely just one thing. So the first thing can be distorted sensory processing. So if we have those sensory issues and we have a brain that's not processing appropriately how things taste, their stuff doesn't taste the same to us as it does to our kids. So there can be those type of reasons where we're like, this is a good thing, why don't you like this? And they're not sensing it the same way that we are, whether that be the flavor, the texture, the consistency, temperature, those things. And then a big part is the cravings for the sweet and starchy foods. And that can come from abnormal gut flora, overgrowth of things like candida in the gut that crave the sugars, whether we like it or not. You know, there, even within myself, there was a period of time where I would be eating, you know, sugary things. I'm like, I'm not enjoying this. This isn't pleasurable. Why am I doing this? And it was almost like outside of myself, like uncontrollable kind of compulsion for sweets, that I was in this addiction to them. And that happens to our kids too. Another reason can be sometimes the state of the mouth. So if we have issues with our saliva glands, if they have tongue tie, lip tie, those physical kind of structural issues that can come into play, then that can make it harder to chew. And often we'll see this first crop up with kids that have a hard time latching and nursing. And then sometimes there are issues with secretions. And this isn't something people think a lot, but every time we secrete something, that can be a way to detox something or to flush something out of the body. And if we have a saliva that's coming into contact with things like vegetables, which have detoxifying antioxidants, that's why we praise them so much, that can actually feel uncomfortable in the mouth. That can cause, you know, itching or stinging or burning. And our kids don't communicate these things the way that we do. They communicate through behavior. And that's why it can be so difficult to realize if these, you know, smaller issues are really what's driving some of this, because, you know, they can say, oh, I refuse this food, or they'll, you know, throw a tantrum about something, versus saying, oh, this stings in my mouth. Right. They don't have that option.
We'll be right back after this quick break. I'm on the road this month, and oh man, am I missing my sweet kitties, Haskell and Lua. They've been a part of our family for more than 2 years, and I'm so grateful they're keeping Darren such good company while I'm away. If you're getting a new pet soon, you're probably already thinking about everything you'll need to buy. Food, toys, a cozy bed, doggy bags or litter boxes. Something you may not be thinking about, though, is pet insurance. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/parenting. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. This year, I've been working on becoming more attuned to my body, and so I'm starting to really recognize how periodic spikes in anxiety or disruptions to my routines can seriously throw my whole system off. And as I've been traveling a ton this past month, which is both disruptive and somewhat stressful, I'm especially glad that I have the extra support of Symbiotic Plus, a 3-in-1 supplement from Ritual with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. Symbiotic Plus provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining to support a healthy gut barrier, and it comes in this very cool minty delayed-release capsule, which was specifically designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon. The bonus is that the capsules don't need to be refrigerated, so I can easily bring them with me in my carry-on. On a personal level, I love that Ritual is committed to sustainability. They're a female-founded B Corp, meaning they are holding themselves accountable long-term to not only think about their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. There's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/tilt. Start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/tilt for 25% off.
So that's so interesting. So this isn't just a matter of a child being inflexible or, you know, and I being familiar with sensory processing issues and knowing that texture and sensations can be really intense and different for kids with sensory integration issues. So that makes sense to me, but I hadn't thought about everything you said is just fascinating to me that it can be this very strong physical response that you're having. It's so it's not just a decision. They're not just deciding, I'm going to not try anything else.
Right. And that's how so much of picky eating is seen, that this is a kid's being bad, being, defiant. And it's really so much beyond that physiologically. So that's something else that I want to dispel, that it isn't just a power struggle that you're having with your kids, that and that the behaviors are telling you something that may not be the way you would perceive it with a neurotypical kid. But even with neurotypical kids, these things can be going on as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always talk about the fact that all behavior is communication and that there is always a reason. You know, there's always a reason why your child is upset or reacting in a certain way. And this is just another example of that. So that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
So I'm just curious with that sensory defensiveness to food textures or, you know, having those really strong reaction to certain feelings and temperatures and tastes and smells. Is that something that kids can overcome? And what does that actually look like?
Yeah, in my experience, it's a combination of getting them nourished and detoxified and then also working through sensory therapies or food therapies with kids to help them break through some of that. But part of this it can happen in the brain. If we have toxicity within the brain that is preventing the signals from being processed properly, that a lot of people, when they think about the toxicity, they think there's something that needs to be detoxed or pulled. But our detoxification system is run through nutrients. So for me, adding in the nutrients is really the most crucial thing so that our bodies can start managing any toxicity on their own and working through any type of backlog that we have inherited or accumulated from our environment. And some kids are more sensitive and susceptible to absorbing these things than others based on, you know, like the MTHFR variations that, you know, we hear about in the community. So there's a certain amount of kind of nourishment that needs to happen. To me, that's really foundational. But then you can also work through some of the sensory steps, you know, putting it on the plate, not eating it, touching it to the lips, tasting it, spitting it out, and as is appropriate for, you know, your kid and what their sensory issues are. And I'm definitely not opposed to adding things into the texture that they like at first. So if your kid only wants things as a smoothie, you know, cool, we can throw probiotics in there. We can throw veggies in there. We can sneak a lot of things in. Same things for kids who really go for, you know, ground meat. Yeah, we can stuff all kinds of things in there that gets it into the body, that gets this process kind of kickstarted.
Yeah, I always felt sorry for myself because Asher would not eat a smoothie, like drink a smoothie. They were just not happening. And I was like, oh, but there's so much I could do with this smoothie, you know? But that is good advice that there are ways to get things in there.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, introducing the foods to kids in other ways so that they are having those exposures. Because even within normal picky eating, it takes 8 to 12 exposures to decide if we like something. So if we have these sensory issues going on top of that, it can take many more tries, many more experiences with a food before we're comfortable with it, before we can maybe try it or take that chance with it.
So I'm curious to know what this actually looks like then. So say someone is listening to this episode who is like, okay, I've been wanting to do this. I feel like I want to make some changes. And maybe they have a suggestion from a pediatrician or something that they know they want to try. How can they set themselves up for success? You know, how do they even begin? Do they sit the child down and talk with them about it? Maybe that depends on the age, but you know, where do they begin if they want to make some big changes in their child's nutritional habits?
I think beginning with mindset is really the crucial piece, and to make sure that everyone in the family or that's, you know, within the household is on board. Because when you decide the changes you want to make, you want to be sure that everyone is willing and able to go along with that. Because if you have a mixed message within the home or even within, you know, school, that this person's going to take pity on me and feed me, you know, my sugar addiction type foods, they'll hold out for that. And that can mean more of that power struggle rather than just the simple physiology. So to me, you know, getting your mindset right, getting everyone on board, and then laying out your plan, deciding this is what we're going to start, this is how we're going to start, so that you can start once and go with it rather than dive in for a couple of days and then give up because, you know, we have a tantrum or something like that. And there's a few different methods that I have used with clients and I talk about within my book. And the first is applied behavioral analysis. And if somebody is already using an ABA program and that's working with their kids successfully, that can be applied to food and that can be a way to bring new things in. The second option I use is backing into it and just saying, here's an important food that we really want to bring in. And let's find a way to get that in, whether it be offering it, sneaking it, let's work on, you know, one step at a time. And then the other option is to just go cold turkey and say, you know, we're going to follow this particular dietary protocol. This day it starts, all we're offering is this, and we're willing to go through the fights until you eat. And that one takes a lot of courage, a lot of support, you know, and I've done that with parents most often because that's where they would need my one-on-one support, because that can be tough. And it's a really, really intense week. But when it's a few months down the road and you're, you know, people will write me and say, my kid's just eating broccoli and they're going to sleep easily at night. And I can't believe I never thought they would eat these things. And now they're doing so happily or they're asking for more. So it's kind of that ripping the Band-Aid off. But it's really intense at first. And most people will do a combination. You might, you know, back into a couple things and you might do some ABA type agreements with your kid. And then you might choose a day, you know, when you've worked some things in where you're like, all right, now we're going cold turkey. We're not having the Goldfish crackers anymore after this day. Because sometimes you notice, oh, well, then when my kid has that, that's really when we have a tantrum. That's really the day I cannot get them to settle down and sleep. So then it can become less and less worth it to keep that food in even some of the time. And so you want to find an alternative. And to your question about talking with the kids, that really does depend on the age, the developmental level. Working with older kids, you've got to have their buy-in, especially if they're going to be doing things outside of your supervision.
Right.
And to me, with you know, middle school, teenage kind of kids, we have to figure out their motivation. And a lot of times, you know, some of our kids can be motivated by they get into the science of the food and what are the food additives and what are the things that don't work for my body. And you can go down that little science experiment road. But with other kids, they're more motivated by acne, motivated by mood swings, social anxieties. And so when you can help them internalize how food is affecting those things for them, then that can be a real motivator in the long run.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I'm just curious, do parents need to do the same thing? Like, is this the, you know, I know the whole family has to be on board, but does that mean if we're cutting out all gluten, then the whole family's cutting out all gluten?
I think it's best to cut it out at home, at least. You know, if you're having lunch at work and you have something else and that works for you, then that's fine. But I think it's best to keep things really on the same page at home. So there isn't that competition or feeling left out, or why do I have to have this special food when everyone else gets to have, you know, dessert and I don't get to. That can create a lot of unhappiness and kind of sibling rivalry. So I think having everyone on board at home is important. And for many of us, we see our own food addictions and compulsions and our own up and down energy and our own reliance on processed food. So if it's something that you recognize in yourself that you would benefit from, then it's a great opportunity to change your own diet and your own health as well. And since I've worked with the GAPS diet, which is all homemade, all whole foods, I will usually have people have, you know, typically mom start the diet in advance of putting the kids on it so that she can go through her own grumpy period of like, now I don't get to eat cake anymore. And, you know, I'm so angry that all I want is nothing that's in this house, that kind of thing. We all go through that little phase and kind of come back out of that and feel better and have more clear energy, you know, more clear mind before putting the kids on a new plan. Because when you're all in that grumpy state together, it can feel really ugly.
I bet.
So going through that yourself, getting your own, you know, good attitude back can be useful before putting your kids through that. And then you'll also be able to be more resilient because you know the benefits that wait on the other side.
We'll be right back after this quick break. If you listen to this show, you probably know that at least 1 in 5 children is differently wired. But did you know that approximately 1 in 2 women will experience hair thinning? If you're part of that 50%, you are absolutely not alone. But because hair thinning for women isn't something people openly talk about, going through it can feel lonely and frustrating. So why not do something about it with Nutrafol? Nutrafol is the #1 dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth isn't going to cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, postpartum, menopause, even for different lifestyles like a plant-based diet. To get your personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes, you can take a simple hair wellness quiz on Nutrafol.com. And because there's no prescription required, you can quickly get set up online with free shipping and automated deliveries, which make it so much easier to stick with your new hair care routine. See results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code TILT. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TILT.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. you get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
That's such a smart idea, starting at first. And
I know.
Yeah. It's a lot.
And moms are really, you know, great at putting their kids first.
Yeah.
And not doing these kinds of things for ourselves. So I think it's, yeah, I encourage mom and women to, you know, put themselves first a little bit on this and to gain your experience. And especially if you're doing something that is requiring more cooking skills or a different way of eating than you're used to, you're going to be a lot more forgiving as you're picking up those skills than your kids would be. So just doing it for yourself a little bit can help you gain confidence in that part as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So towards the end of your book, one of your chapters is My Child Won't... ... And I love that chapter because you basically take my child won't drink water, my child won't eat veggies, you know, all these things that I'm sure every parent is, you know, at least some of them are going to apply to them. Like, what do I do about this? Can you tell us a little bit about that chapter and how you figured all of that out?
Yeah, it was really with my client work and just brainstorming with people and seeing what worked for them. Because with the GAPS diet, we include, you know, bone broth. And if kids won't drink bone broth, how can we get that into their diet every day? So we got to cook all our meats in it. We got to put it in a smoothie. We can, you know, reheat our veggies in it. Like whatever your kid latches onto, we're going to run with that and find a way to get these other foods in. And so it was just kind of the mishmash of everything that I've seen come up and the common foods amongst healing diets, because that's been my focus, and, you know, several different suggestions of how we can bring those things in just to troubleshoot and make it a little bit easier and get you guys thinking about, you know, what is another option? There has to be a way that we can do this. And that's part of that mindset thing too, versus the, you know, so many of us are like, my kid will never. But if we open our mind to how could I get this in? How could I sneak this into their food? Mm-hmm. That's a different question for our brain to work on. And that can get the juices kind of flowing in our mind about a new idea as well.
Yeah. Well, I just appreciated how practical it was. You know, this is definitely a book that if people are looking to make changes, you're telling them exactly how to do it and how to just tackle these challenges that may seem overwhelming and undoable. So when I got to that chapter, I was like, oh, this is just so great to have it all spelled out for people.
Thanks. Yeah, I am a practical person by nature.
Yeah.
And very much a step-by-step person.
Yeah, it's awesome. So if parents are listening to this and they're feeling super determined and inspired, what, you know, do you have maybe one or two pieces of advice? You talked about the importance of mindset, but what could they do like today, you know, as they're listening to this podcast and they're like, okay, I'm ready to get started. What's the first or second thing that they should do? Where do they start?
I think choosing a food or a food group that you feel like your kid's really missing out on and you really want to bring in, and finding a way to bring that in. Just, you know, choosing one thing and kind of backing into it, trying something new. And it surprised me. I've heard so many parents who've read the book and say, you know, I just tried a couple of things tonight and the kids were actually open to it. So especially when you've kind of given up and it's been maybe many months or years since you've tried something new, they can surprise you that they may be open to the novelty of something all of a sudden. So that's why I always say people, you know, can start. If you want your kids to eat veggies, can you sneak something in a smoothie? Can you grind it up and put it in a hamburger patty? You know, what's a creative way you could use that just to try it tonight?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. One of the things that we found worked in terms of just introducing more foods and thinking about food differently was just watching some documentaries together. Like that sugar film was one that we really liked. I don't know if you've seen that. It was an Australian filmmaker and it was a little bit like Super Size Me, but he went on a diet where for 30 or 60 days, he was eating kind of hidden sugars, the amount that the average Australian was consuming daily.
And I have not seen that.
It's so good. And he was someone who did not eat sugar at all prior to that. And so just watching how his body changed made a big impression on Asher. And it's been really interesting to see him take more ownership and make better choices over the food that he's eaten. So for the older kids too, exposing them to some of the science, as you said, and then also some of the great material that's out there that could really make an impression on them.
Yeah, that's a great example. And another thing is getting your kids involved in food in other ways. You know, will they go to a farm with you and pick something? Can you grow a garden? Can they pick out a veggie at the grocery store and help you learn to prep or, you know, help you prep it and learn that? Because kids are much more okay with trying something new when they have that personal connection to it in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk in your book about, you know, different ages, how they can be involved. And certainly, you know, if they are kids who enjoy being part of the food prep process or making dinners, that it is an excellent way to motivate them to try new things. So, okay, I would like to know, where can listeners find you? Where can they learn more about your book, From Mac and Cheese to Veggies, please? And yeah, just tell us the best way for listeners to engage with you.
Yeah, so the book is available on Amazon. It's a Kindle, it's a hardback, it's a paperback, whichever way you want it, it's available there. And then my website is bodywisdomnutrition.com. And I have a tab for parents that talks about the book. And I also blog about picky eating, parenting issues, and just an overall non-toxic lifestyle, since that's another piece that I came to in my work with kids on the spectrum, was how do we reduce the toxic burden that's coming into our household? And so I kind of blog about all those issues, about this lifestyle there.
Fantastic. Well, listeners, I will include links to all of Jennifer's resources, her blog, her book, and I will put those on the show notes page. So definitely check out Jennifer's book and the work that she's doing on her website. Jennifer, thank you so much for this conversation. I'm so curious to hear feedback from people, because again, I think this is something so many parents in our community are dealing with. So thanks for the practical insights and for the work that you put out there.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Tilt Parenting Podcast. For the show notes for this episode, including links to Jennifer's book, From Mac and Cheese to Veggies, Please, and all the other resources we discussed, visit tiltparenting.com/session114. If you'd like what we're doing at the Tilt Parenting Podcast and you'd like to support us, there are a few easy and meaningful ways you can do this. One is to join my Patreon campaign, just like listeners Bree Overly and Alexandra LaRose did. Thank you, Bree and Alexandra. Patreon is an online platform that allows people to make a small monthly contribution to support the work of an artist or a musician, or in my case, a podcaster. It's super easy to sign up, and even a small donation helps. If you'd like to support the show, visit patreon.com/tiltparenting. That's patreon.com/tiltparenting, or you can find a link on the Tilt Parenting website on the podcast page. The other way you can help is to head over to iTunes and leave a rating or a review, or both, if you haven't done so already. There are a lot of parenting podcasts out there, and ratings and reviews help keep the podcast highly visible, which in turn makes it a lot easier for me to send out those emails and get the big guests to agree to come on the show. So thank you so much. And thanks again for listening. For more information on Tilt Parenting, visit www.tiltparenting.com.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free. free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.